Welcome to the Defense and Aerospace Report podcast. I'm your host, Vago Maradian. Our podcast is brought to you by Bell. Since 1935, Bell has been redefining flight. Learn more about its pioneering spirit at bellflight.com. The final 2 weeks of the Trump administration are expected to be chaotic as the outgoing team continues to complicate matters for President-elect Joe Biden's transition teams across government. Meanwhile, Biden continues to announce defense members that will compose his senior national security team. Lloyd Austin is meeting with lawmakers in advance of his confirmation hearings in both the House and Senate necessary to garner the waiver, given that he retired from active duty as a four-star Army general only 4 years ago, rather than the 7 years required by law. Dr. Kath Hicks has been selected as the nation's next Deputy Defense Secretary, and Colin Kahl to serve as the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy. Joining us today to update us on the transition are Michael Baer, the former chairman of the Defense Business Board and president of the Dumbarton Strategies Consultancy, and Arnold Pinaro, former staff director of the Senate Armed Services Committee, who is now the chairman of the Pinaro Group Consultancy and the chairman of the National Defense Industrial Association. Both of these men have been involved on the defense side of presidential transitions over the past four decades. Michael and Arnold, happy new year, and thanks very much for joining us.
Likewise, Vago.
Good to be back.
Let's start with the chaos that we're now experiencing. We've got 15, this administration has 15 days left in office, and there is a concern that the chaos is already influencing the transition process. We've heard from the Biden team and from the president-elect himself that his transition teams have not gotten the kind of cooperation that they would have liked. The Trump administration pushes back and says, you know, gives a count on the number of meetings, but we both have talked to a lot of people who understand that the outgoing team is not working well with the incoming team. At the same time, there's a Republican push to delegitimize Joe Biden as president. Obviously, a large number of GOP lawmakers tomorrow are expected to vote against certifying the president-elect as the nation's 46th president, which is a complicating factor. How is all of this, Arnold, and let's start with you, how is all of this going to play as we try to get Lloyd Austin confirmed as the 28th defense secretary and Kath Hicks as the deputy defense secretary and get him on the job on January 20th, which is something that we've seen in every other past administration to at least ensure that there is a senior Biden political representation at one of the most important government departments?
Vago, I think the focus right now ought to be what are things going to look like on January 20th, as you point out, less than roughly 2 weeks away. And the big problem right now is the clock and the calendar. And when it comes to the issue of getting Lloyd Austin and Kath Hicks and the Undersecretary of Policy confirmed, all highly qualified for the positions to which they will be nominated on January 20th by President Biden, the problem you've got is the calendar. We're in the two-minute drill already. The House basically and the Senate are focused on the certification of the electors on January 6th, which is not going to be a smooth process, according to all reports. The House then is likely to go out for a period of time before they come back. The Senate can't organize, so they know the results of the Georgia election, and those are certified. The Senate Armed Services Committee, because of the loss, Martha McSally's loss, and David Perdue is no longer a United States senator, they're tied right now with the same number. So the committee is not even in a position where they could report something out unless it was on a totally bipartisan basis. And so the problem is, you know, will the either majority or minority leader, whichever one is in charge, agree to allow the Senate to proceed to vote on a waiver, which has been introduced in the Senate, as well as a confirmation of Lloyd Austin at a minimum on January 20th, will the House be actually in a position to even consider a waiver? They claim they're going to have a hearing. That adds a significant complication. So to me right now, the issue is not as much as substance, but it's process. And of course, nominations are always process oriented. And so I think right now, the issue of what's going to be the situation on January 20th, the good government answer is Lloyd Austin should be waived and confirmed and on board as the Secretary of Defense, as you mentioned, as has been the precedent going all the way back to Ronald Reagan for a new administration. If not, and he's not available for whatever reason, not related to substance, then the next good government answer is the current Deputy Secretary of Defense, David Norquist, under Title 10, should become the Acting Secretary of Defense. I don't think it's conceivable that President Biden would allow the current Acting Secretary of Defense, who was put in there as a loyalist to Donald Trump, to remain on the job after noon on January 20th.
But that supposes that President Trump, I mean, we've all been hearing that there might be a Martin Luther King Day weekend massacre of political appointees to further complicate this process, which means that David Norquist might not be there as the Deputy Defense Secretary to serve as that sort of safe and competent pair of hands. Michael, your sense on how all of this is going to play out?
Yes, Vago, that's a very subtle but important concern. This process from 19th through the 20th of January through the 21st or 2nd, as it may go, is very much dependent upon collegiality from the outgoing to the incoming administration. The law requires that there be a Senate-confirmed individual as the secretary or the acting secretary, and there must be one in each of the three services. So a minimum of four political appointees have to be there. Those political appointees that are there are usually the choice of the president-elect, negotiated with them individually, and cleared with a designated official of the outgoing president's transition support team. Here in this case, should President Trump decide to clean out the department and leaving only people who are unacceptable to President Biden, it really boxes the president-elect in. This is way more than in 2001 pulling the W's off the keyboards. What we would see is the president-elect would then either have to bring someone out of another agency, which doesn't well serve defense, or he has to make one of the service chiefs, both service secretary and service chief, as Frank Kelso and Gordon Sullivan had to do in transitions in the distant past. So this is, watching this play out here is far more than just simply a calendar exercise. It's a great lens into how cooperative the outgoing administration will be in enabling the real transition of power, which, as Arnold said, occurs sharply at 12 noon on the 20th. Over.
Arnold?
So if I go, the incoming administration, I'm sure, is doing what I would call prudent planning for every eventuality. The best case, as Michael and I have described, ought to be the good government case. The worst case would be having to deal with an actual induced chaotic situation. There's another option, and that is under the Vacancy Act, President Biden could bring back one of the Senate-confirmed officials that was just, if they were let go by Trump prior to January 20th. So they would have that option. I don't think it's practical. I don't see a circumstance where we would have a four-star active duty military officer serving as the acting secretary of defense. I don't see it. It would not be, you know, in accordance with civilian control and the chain of command. So I think the worst case option would be to look at perhaps bringing back a David Norquist or an Ellen Lord or somebody like that if they're not on board on the 20th and available to be the acting. Should Lord Austin not be confirmed on the 20th, as he really should be. But again, the clock is working against that right now, just because of the organization of the House and Senate.
Let's just get into a technical distinction, because some folks are, I'm sure, wrapping their mind around it, right? In terms of who can fill these positions. So in the event that there is a Martin Luther King Day massacre of senior political appointees at the Pentagon, who are legally, Arnold, the folks who can fill those jobs or backfill those jobs, right? Because President Trump and his team would have to pick prior confirmed people for these jobs, correct?
Well, I think the decision on who's going to be in these positions is really going to revolve down to the Biden team and the Biden transition, because they don't have to go along with anybody that the Trump administration picks, because once he's president at noon on January 20th, he can remove anybody that's there that he wants to. And so my view would be they're going to decide, and you have two ways of doing this. You have the normal executive order succession plan that's well spelled out and recently promulgated, which is very traditional. They went back to the traditional succession. the secretary, then the deputy, then the secretary of the Army, the other service secretaries, and down the line. However, if none of those people would be available, he can use the Vacancy Act. And under the Vacancy Act, there are three options: a Senate-confirmed person from somewhere else, someone that has been in the Department of Defense for 90 days on the day the vacancy occurs, serving at a GS 15 rate or higher, or the first assistant. And so there are lots of options. And again, that would include, as they did with Christine Fox in the Obama administration, they brought her back in to be acting deputy after she'd already left the Pentagon. You have to have been confirmed within a certain number of days. So I think, frankly, again, I certainly would encourage the House and Senate to get the waiver and get Austin confirmed by January 20th so we don't have to worry about or deal with any of this. But there's certainly a lot of good options available should they have to deal with the worst case circumstance. And they should be doing that planning right now. Over.
Michael?
Yes, and Vago, I would add to that, in my experience, I think it's the same as Arnold's. From 1980 forward, I have never seen a situation in which this wasn't done collegially, well in advance, and there's zero drama, absolutely zero drama. That's not the case here. And it's, so with that, it's highly unprecedented, and unprecedented at a particularly dangerous time in the world and a very challenging time in the United States. Over.
And Vago, that's why all the living Secretary of Defenses came out in the last couple of days with one of the most compelling and strongest statements of what the leadership in the Pentagon and the leadership in the current administration ought to be doing as it relates to the national security of this country. And so that's the role, that's the template that ought to be followed, what all the former living secretaries of defense in Republican and Democratic administrations have put out and given guidance to the current administration.
I look, all eyes are going to be on what happens tomorrow on January 6th as Congress holds these votes, and the president and counter protesters are both promising rallies and the National Guard being mobilized. And there's this concern folks have that an incident is you know, that the president may try to precipitate an incident in which troops are then called in to become involved, obviously a nightmare scenario. Let me ask for your guys' take, and I do want to get your sense on the confirmation process and where Lloyd Austin is and where we're going to go with Kath Hicks's as well, and for Colin Call at this point, the senior most people who have been announced at the Defense Department for the Defense Department. What happens if President Trump directs his political appointees to not leave their jobs at noon on January the 20th, because folks have a concern that he may not go to the inauguration and choose not to leave, right? How does that work? And I ask it because I think it's unprecedented, but I can't figure any two better people I'd ask this question of.
Vago, at noon the 20th, or 12:30 the 20th, whenever the oath is issued, at that stage, the former president's powers evaporate, and he has no authority to direct, bind, or control anyone. And whoever the new president, President Biden, selects to be the secretary or the acting secretary of defense, issues the appropriate orders for people to depart. Now, traditionally, they depart at midnight the 19th, but whoever's in charge on the 20th, the moment that oath of office is given, with the delegated authority from the president, who can dismiss and have everyone the heck out of their jobs, if need be, requiring the security guards to escort them to the door and cancel their badges. That there's just not an issue with that. The department is very capable of eliminating people that shouldn't be in spaces.
And Vago, I'd like to say also, there are roughly 60 presidential appointed, Senate confirmed positions in the Pentagon, but over 45% of them don't have Senate confirmed people serving in them right now. And in the several hundred scheduled C's and other political appointees, the vast majority, 99.9% of these people are good government people. They're patriots. And I think they understand the rules of the road, and you know, they aren't going to be people that are going to basically not follow the good government process. So I have tremendous faith in the vast majority of the people working in the Pentagon now that are tied to the current administration, that should some attempts like that be made, they're going to do what they're going to do, the right thing. So, but again, as Michael had said, the minute that President Biden accepts the oath of office and is sworn in, he has all the authority, and you serve at the pleasure of the president as a political appointee. And the transition team will have notified everybody in the Pentagon that ought to be gone as of noon on January 20th. So I think they will be on top of this as well. But again, I'd like to say the vast majority of those people in those positions are good government folks, and they're going to be doing the right thing no matter what.
Yes, and Vago, we have great confidence too in the line judges for this. The line judges are the career general counsels that exist at the Department of Defense and in the services. Paul Kofsky, I think, is the senior of those career general counsels. He is a terrific mind. He is very firm and has lived every possible contingency over his decades of federal service as the deputy and assistant general counsel to the Department of Defense. So I am confident that should anything like this occur, that there will be level minds, well thought through processes, and an iron fist in enforcing Title 10 and the law.
Let me take the conversation to the confirmation for both Kath Hicks and for Lloyd Austin. General Austin has been meeting with members of Congress. Some folks have been convinced he's the right choice. Others are somewhat skeptical. Arnold, how do you characterize the process and where we are as we go through this? Because there is a movement among some folks to say, hey, look, we're not going to go along with this waiver. For some, it's principle, although others question, you know, how could you have been for Mattis on principle getting a waiver and not be for Austin getting a waiver on principle? I think you guys are on the same page. It's the president's choice. And honestly, Lloyd Austin, after wearing an Army uniform for four decades, is no different at 2 years, 6 years, or 14 years after he leaves uniform. Arnold, what's your sense on where we are in the process of convincing lawmakers and whether we're headed to something that is Hagel-like in terms of the vote, where there were folks who believed that he was not qualified for the job, and there are some folks who are expressing that kind of sentiment as well, although not as widespread nor as publicly?
Well, Vago, in terms of the Pentagon nominees, particularly General Austin, just like they are with the other cabinet nominees, the transition team and the Sherpas are making the rounds and introducing the nominees to the U.S. Senate. But in this case, there are going to have to be two votes. There's going to have to be a vote on a waiver, and that has to occur in the House and the Senate in identical form and has to be signed into law by the president. So the House has said they're going to have a hearing to be able to evaluate whether or not they want to vote for the waiver. A number of people have said they're for it. A number of people have said they're against it. But right now, neither the House nor the Senate is focused primarily on confirmations. They're really focused on Georgia in the Senate. They're focused on January 6th. And in the Senate, you're going to have two votes. You're going to have a vote for the waiver, and you're going to also have the vote on the confirmation. The House does not vote on the confirmation in advising consent. Nothing's going to happen this week. The Senate's not organized, and they're focused on other things. And to get something done by the 20th, the Senate and House would have to run some hearings next week. The Senate is looking at whether or not they want to have a separate hearing just to talk about the waiver, and then a separate typical nomination hearing. And so as of right now, the Senate Armed Services Committee has not announced any hearings for next week. So if they're going to basically have all of this done by the 20th, that's why I said when it comes to the process, not substance. Again, I'm not talking substance. I'm talking process. You know, we're in the 2-minute drill to get all this done by January 20th. And right now, I don't think you can give too much of a detailed assessment other than the nominee is highly qualified and he's doing all the normal things you do to get confirmed, because the people really haven't focused on the issue right now, Vago. And my experience, long experience on the two committees, the Armed Services Committees, they're gonna focus on this when they know they have a hearing. They're gonna focus on it when the nominee appears before them And then that's how it's going to flow from there. And so, again, we're in the 2-minute drill. And, you know, I think things will be a lot clearer as to the schedule when we get towards the end of this week, when maybe we'll know the outcome of the Georgia elections. And we certainly should know the outcome of the January 6th certification of the electoral vote. So I think by week's end, this picture will be clearer. But again, the clock is not in our favor right now to get him on board by January 20th, as it should be.
And I should point out, right, that this very same drama is playing out for Tony Blinken, Avril Haines, Alejandro Mayorkas, right? I mean, all of the other people who compose the national security team, each one of those committees in turn are going to have to do this. So it's, although a waiver issue is not as important, but still, you need to have confirmation hearings to make sure that it's not just DOD that's taken care of, but all of the other government departments. Michael, go ahead.
Vago, that just is not practical. I mean, I just don't see, if you look at the clock, and this is unusual. The Senate typically is organized by now. They're appointing committee members. They're deciding who the chairman are. None of that's happened, and none of that can happen till the Georgia vote is certified, not just the news media announced the results tonight. It's got to be certified. And so, you know, when is that going to happen? I certainly don't have the answer to that. So I think January 20th is a very, very steep climb, not just for the Pentagon, for most other cabinet nominees. Over.
Michael.
So, Vago, there's another aspect that is really material about this 2-minute drill that Arnold so wisely points out here. And that is that what, if you think about this, Lloyd Austin has to line up 635 votes. He's got to do 435 in the House. He's got to get two full votes in the United States Senate at 100 votes apiece. That's a lot of work and a lot of people to see between now and when he takes office. Unlike other people who sought the job of Secretary of Defense for Joe Biden, Austin was not and had not spent, had not had the opportunity to consider what in fact he was going to do when he was in that job. Typically, nominees at this point, in between preparing and preparing for their confirmation hearing, are using the time to prepare their own intellectual plan and approach to the job. Lloyd Austin's going to be really stressed during these next 2 weeks for the free time to do this. So it is very unfortunate, and it puts a greater burden on him at a time in which, as both Arnold and I have said, and you've said, Vago, this is one of the toughest times any new Secretary of Defense has assumed the job. And he's had the least opportunity to prepare for it, that is, specifically prepare for it. I'm not dismissing his immense accomplishments in uniform. This is really different. Over.
Let me ask quickly before we go. Kath Hicks was leading the transition team at the Pentagon. She's named to be Deputy Defense Secretary, a first-rate policy mind. Some folks have said one of the best bosses they've ever worked for, who's very tough but also very fair and obviously is very good at talent management, given the number of people she's mentored during her career. But there is a concern among some that she doesn't have the mechanical operational experience of leading an organization, especially given the Deputy Defense Secretary acts as the chief management officer now that that job has been eliminated. Any sense from your guys' standpoint about whether or not that should be a factor at all? For many people, it's not. Some, however, raise it, and I thought I'd put it to the both of you. Go ahead.
Well, Vago, I think it's a wise choice, very experienced, very skilled. I think she's got much stronger management credentials than people realize, both from her time in the Pentagon previously, when she was really the go-to person in policy, helping run that shop, certainly her work at CSIS and in other areas. And frankly, my hope would be that we could get both Lloyd Austin and Kath Hicks confirmed on January 20th. So we'd have the top two civilians there in the Pentagon for total civilian control. And the deputy is going to be the chief operating officer. It's very clear that's going to be a key role. She'll get asked about that in great detail during the confirmation hearings. And I'm sure she'll be well prepared to convince the senators that she's certainly capable of performing that role.
Yeah, Vago, I think it is the second toughest job in the executive branch, the deputy secretary. And I tend to see them as the secretary is the what we're going to do person. The deputy is the how we're going to get it done person. So that responsibility is enormous. And the two of them have to work together. And as Arnold said, the quicker they are there together, the more time they spend before together, working out the who does what is really critical to the mutual success. No secretary of any of the modern era was successful without a good, competent, and trusted deputy. So getting off to that really great start is essential for both them, the nation, and the president.
Gentlemen, thanks very much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Looking forward to having you guys back on again. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Vago.
And now a word from our sponsor, retired United States Army Major General Jeff Schlosser, who is the Executive Vice President for Strategic Pursuits at Bell.
We've been building creative and innovative aircraft, next generation types of capabilities for almost 9 decades. Bell is the company that can deliver that.
Thanks very much, sir. And thanks to all of you for listening. Please follow our daily podcasts and visit the Defense and Aerospace Report website to subscribe to our weekly newsletter. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook at Defense and Aerospace Report, and check us out on LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our weekly cyber report sponsored by Northrop Grumman. Thanks again to Bell for their generous sponsorship, and we'll see you again tomorrow.